This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. For the home garden inclined, the beginning of spring typically can't come soon enough. And we're happy to match that energy with our now annual discussion of tips and maybe even some tricks for spring planting that makes people's yards, window boxes, and balconies places of delight. Here to do that with us after what's felt like a long winter are two experts and friends of the show. Daria McKelvey is Supervisor of Home Gardening Information and Outreach at Missouri Botanical Garden. Great to see you again.
Good to be here again.
And we also have Eliza Pesero. She's Field Specialist in Horticulture at University of Missouri's Extension St. Louis County Office. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And we also want to hear from you. Do you have a question about gardening this spring? Maybe you've been wondering whether you should plant something new or different in a garden you've kept for a while now. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. All right, I'm going to start with something that a lot of people have been wondering about. So just this past weekend, we saw temperatures in the 80s, sweaty weather, and there were plenty of gardeners rejoicing in the sun and warmth. They got their hands in some soil, only for there to be a cold snap that brought temperatures down to the 30s. So Daria and Eliza, how can we tell if our plants are goners or not? Daria, we'll start with you.
I actually always say give it time, because sometimes plants are not. Their foliage might have gotten damaged, but sometimes just giving a little time when the temperatures warm up, they may actually revive themselves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Daria. Anything that was flowering is going to be most likely to be damaged. So a lot of peaches were flowering this weekend. I was just up at Earth Dance Organic Farm School, and they also had some cherries and plums that were flowering, and their plum tree was totally decimated. All of those flowers were actually dried up. And so only time will tell if they get any fruit from those trees. But if the flowers look really dried up after a frost like that, there probably won't be that much fruit.
Mm-hmm. So then it's don't give up just yet and leave them alone?
Yes, because a lot of the stuff that came out was early flowering plants, and a lot of them are ornamentals. So the freeze didn't damage the leaves. So we haven't seen, they're just starting to come out. So those aren't damaged. And so the tree and the perennials should be fine. It's just the flowers that got hit in a lot of our ornamental species this week.
Yeah. Are there some spring plants that actually do better in cold snaps than others, Eliza?
That's a really good question. I'm not actually sure. I know for vegetable gardening in general, at this time of the year, all of our brassicas, so like kale, broccoli, cauliflower, they all like the cold, and they can actually get a little bit sweeter with the cold. So that's the types of things we're planting now, because they do actually thrive in this type of weather.
Mm-hmm. Dory, is there anything?
There are some ornamentals like hellebores. Like, they did get a little droopy on that Tuesday, but they actually perked back up, so they can tolerate, they're early spring, so they can tolerate a little bit of cold temperatures.
But okay. Yeah. Just like humans, a little bit of droop and a bit of perking up again.
Yes.
Now, a couple weeks ago, we published a story written by STLPR reporter Katie Gravich with the headline, "Spring is coming earlier to St. Louis, and that's bad news for plants." And Daria, you are quoted in that article, which explains what warmer temps in the earlier parts of spring do to the life cycle of plants. Mm-hmm. So how is it that spring sprung so early? Just to go back to winter-like temperatures, what effect does that have on that life cycle?
Yeah, especially for our early spring flowering plants, particularly like our natives, they are adapted to, be emerging when also their pollinators are emerging. And if they flush out, we get a freeze, there's no flowers, that means that the resources for pollinators are gone as well. And so that can have a detriment on the population of our native plants. That's where we see the biggest concern.
Mm-hmm. And there's been some concern about pollinators over the past few years, right, Eliza?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the concern, I think people have turned their attention really on honeybees, but in the past few years, I think people are starting to understand that it's really more of our native bee species that we need to be protecting, because we want to make sure we have a wide diversity of pollinators, kind of like diversifying your stock portfolio, to make sure that all of our native plants and all of our fruit and vegetables can be pollinated.
Mm-hmm. So within an earlier spring, as it were, I mean, what does that mean for the plants, not only in our yards, but across the region, Daria?
It could mean that, like we saw this past week, those beautiful flowers we all expect to see at spring, they get damaged early, so we don't get to enjoy them as much. Or like Eliza said, the fruit crops for those plants, might get damaged. And just overall health of the plant, that's going to put a lot of stress, especially if they had started leafing out and then get frozen. Takes a lot of energy to put out those leaves, and so they're going to lose resources trying to reform those again. Like, that's taking a lot of energy out of their roots, so it can have a detriment on their health over time.
Mm-hmm. To avoid plants getting wrecked by cold snaps, our producer Maya Norfleet was wondering whether it's a good idea to bring planters indoors and to place them under grow lights.
So we were talking about this a little bit before the show. It depends on, so if it's a plant that's in a planter, if it's been outside all winter, I would say probably a better idea would be to put some mulch on it, have some cover. So that can be leaf mulch or straw mulch. That's what we do with things like strawberries, that if they're staying in the ground all year round and you need a pretty thick layer of mulch. But if it's something small, like we were talking about house plants earlier, you can bring those back in, and they might not necessarily need extra grow lights, just a little bit of that warmth from being inside.
Mm-hmm. Should we hug them?
Yeah. Talk to them, encourage them.
Right, right. Well, my mother-in-law actually says she is one of those people who believes that talking to your plants is a good thing. She has a pretty green thumb. So, and this last note about the cold, Brian had said, maybe this is silly. I want to plant new flowers in my flower boxes, but I'm nervous about the wild swings in temperature these past weeks. What can I do not to mess up my new plantings?
You could potentially do like some early spring annuals, because those are adapted to more of the cooler temperatures, like pansies and maybe some snapdragons. We're going to get a little cold on Friday, but we should come out of that pretty quickly. So those should be fine.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get to the basics here, because there are plenty of people who will be trying their hand at gardening for the first time. What are the basic requirements for starting a garden, Daria?
I'd say number one, do your homework, please. we always stress to, before you start planting, especially if it's your first time, do a little research. Use like university websites, botanical gardens. Don't follow everybody on TikTok, because there's a lot of junk information out there, but use good resources to understand a little bit about gardening, and also try to find plants that fit with your growing conditions. So assess your light, your soil conditions. Like Eliza can talk more about this, but now would be a great time to get a soil test done to see where your nutrient levels are, and study what your water requirements and your landscape, and then try to find plants that are going to match that condition, and that will set you up for more success mm-hmm. in the long run.
On that note about testing the soil, mm-hmm. One of our colleagues here moved to a new house in the past year and asked, do I need to be concerned about contaminated soil if I'm planting vegetables in raised garden beds? So there's some different factors here. What is the best way to get soil tested, and what should I be looking out for? Eliza?
Yeah, so the main soil contaminants in urban areas, and we test for these with our heavy metal testing at the University of Missouri Extension, those are going to be lead and arsenic. And lead is pretty big in this area because of the history of mining and lead that used to be in paint and even in gasoline. So you can submit a soil sample to one of our local extension offices, and then we'll test for those contaminants. If you're growing in raised beds and you're bringing in your own soil, that soil is usually not going to be contaminated at all. So you shouldn't worry about contamination. But if you're growing in the ground, that's when you might need to worry about it. And mm-hmm. depending on the level of lead in the soil, there are some practices, some vegetables you can plant, like leafy greens where you're eating the part that's actually above ground, that should be fine. But root crops, things that it'll be harder to wash off, we usually recommend against those if there's any lead in the soil.
Mm-hmm. So lead testing in the county can be done. Daria, how about the city? Do you have any insight into that?
We actually use the same testing for the state. Like University of Missouri Extension is the go-to for state soil testing.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. That's great to know. What about where people are planting? You know, we've talked in the past about sunlight in particular, but what are some of the other things to take into consideration if you were going to be planting flowers, for instance, Daria?
I would say one of the things you don't think about is the tree canopy. So if you already have trees in your yard, like right now, they're likely dormant and bare. And so you think, oh, I've got a lot of light. But you have to remember your plant is going to be underneath that tree when it's leafed out. So you might actually have shady conditions. So you want plants that will tolerate that kind of growing environment.
Mm-hmm. There's also been a bit of invasive growth, I think, of honeysuckle, if
yes.
That's right. And that has been growing over, like, gardens.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be done? I mean, we can't torch them, right?
Move.
No, move. Oh, my gosh.
It's a very invasive weed. And unfortunately, it's also, you can recognize it now because it's the first thing to leaf out. It leafs out way before any of our native species do. But there's not much. You have to either cut it down and regularly cut it back, or the only other method is using like an herbicide on it to cut mm-hmm. it and spray it. That is the only thing that kills it because it's so aggressive and so invasive.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to add to that, Eliza?
No, definitely. The herbicide is usually, I know a lot of people are against using herbicides, but there are safe ways to use herbicides to effectively kill off honeysuckle so you don't have to keep hacking it back.
Mm-hmm. Can you provide any insight into that? Or
yeah. So I can't think of the products off the top of my head, but you basically apply herbicide. You cut down the honeysuckle, and then you apply herbicide to the stump itself, and then it will kill the stump kind of from the inside out, so mm-hmm. it'll be easier to get out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a quick break here, but in the meantime, we want to hear from you. What is on your mind about gardening this spring and making it through the summer and hopefully to fall as well? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send an email to talk@stlpr.org. We'll be back shortly to continue our annual spring gardening conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. Let's return to our conversation about spring gardening do's, don'ts, and what-ifs with Eliza Pesero and Daria McKelvey. Before the break, we were talking about resources, and we have listeners in Illinois as well. Eliza, what are some of the places folks in Illinois can turn for some help as they are doing their spring gardening?
Yeah, so I actually used to work over with University of Illinois Extension, and yeah, in the Metro East, they have an office in Edwardsville and then one in Waterloo, Illinois as well. So their offices are a great place to get any gardening questions answered. They also run the Illinois Master Gardener program. So their master gardeners run their hotlines on that side of the river, and they can always answer gardening questions too.
Mm-hmm. Is there a great deal of difference between things that people should be thinking about, you know, on that side of the river? As opposed to here?
Climatically, it's very similar. The soil conditions are maybe the thing that's the most different. I know we have really heavy clay soils over here and maybe a little bit more contamination from the urban area here on this side. But with East St. Louis, I'm sure they have their own soil contamination issues too.
Mm-hmm. We have Alex, who's calling from St. Louis. Alex, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hello.
Hi. Go
How
ahead.
Are you?
Oh, I'm doing well.
Well, my only comment was related to sources for information on what to plant, when to plant, and the local garden shops in our area. There are lots of them, and I feel like they're a good resource for information, maybe slightly better than your big box stores as far as what you can plant early and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Are you part of a community of people who garden regularly, Alex?
Well, I'm guilty of working at a local garden shop and driving around delivering plants for them right now.
So. Oh, okay. Well, not guilty. Lucky to be doing that, right?
Guilty, yes. Right. Alex, guilty by association, no.
Sure. Thank you so much for that. Are there groups that you know of where people are, you know, supporting one another with different tips, with advice? I know that sometimes tool exchanges are also part of what people do, Daria.
Yeah, there's plenty of local community gardens. I think that would be one of the strongest. You're working with all kinds of people, and you can ask them, and they can support you with your own growing conditions and what you're interested in. And one of the other resources, and I know we brought this up last time, I have to give a shout out to the Seed St. Louis organization because they have one of the greatest planting calendars for vegetables. Like it, I really enjoy the timing and it's easy to read. So that's another way that you can, another resource I'd want to throw out there.
Mm-hmm. That's actually where I learned about the tool trading that went on.
Okay.
Yeah. We have Mary who's calling from Steelville. Mary, welcome.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Okay, I was calling to ask about kudzu, that invasive plant that just takes over. Because where I live, we have an old cemetery that was from the 1800s into the early 1900s, and a woman who was buried there, is buried there, she brought back some kudzu from down in Alabama where they were using it to prevent erosion along the highways. And in my car parked. So she thought it was pretty and planted it on the hillside at the cemetery. And so from our historical society, the cemetery's in our care to manage and keep it nice. And so we've been trying everything from having the fire department come and burn it to spraying it to cutting it back, and we just can't get a hold of it, you know, to manage it, to quit taking over and covering all the gravestones. And
right. Mary, thank you for calling with that. And Dara, you were groaning audibly as you were hearing about kudzu.
Oh, I feel so bad. Yeah, my heart goes out to her. It's unfortunate, hopefully not up here just yet, but it is a really invasive weed. It's like the weed that ate the south, and that's
right.
Like it's known because it just takes over. Like it will cover entire structures. And I think you have to kind of treat it like honeysuckle. The only way to is could regular cutting, spraying, and just trying to stop new establishment as best as you can. But I don't think just there's a remedy just yet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know as well as
yeah,
that?
Not that I know of. I mean, it sounds like what she's doing already, having the fire department come out and spraying it. Definitely you want to, if you're using any herbicides, don't use the same herbicide over and over because you wouldn't want the...
To build up a resistance.
Exactly.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I was only half joking when I said torch it earlier, but it sounds like
that's
a real
thing people do.
Yeah. We had an email from Cliff in St. Louis who says, I'm thinking of starting a vegetable garden in my yard this year. However, I have many squirrels in my trees. I'm wondering if there's any way to keep them from decimating anything I try to grow. Any suggestions? And Eliza, this time the audible groan came from you.
And I think we did touch on squirrels in the fall as well. My fix for squirrels is covering your vegetables because squirrels are going to dig up anything you plant. If you transplant vegetables, even if you've direct seeded things, they're going to dig up your garden. So you can put chicken wire over your whole garden bed. That might be kind of tough if you're doing like a larger raised bed. But if you're doing containers, that's pretty feasible to just kind of like fold chicken wire over the top and then you can bend it back when you need to harvest or anything.
Mm-hmm. Producer Maya Norfleet uses plastic forks. She has stuck those into some of the plants she has on our balcony.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So.
And they work?
They have worked, apparently. Right. Yeah.
Another thing that works, if you can somehow coax a red-tailed hawk to hang around, they're very efficient, too. We had one at the garden, got a squirrel the other day, so.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. Circle of life. We have Rachel, who's calling from Creve Coeur. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a side of my house that is just bare. Lawn goes right up to the side. And I'm not really interested in the maintenance of putting in an organized flower bed and having to mulch. But I'd love something that I can plant that'll add some color and interest and is fairly low maintenance but won't take over the whole side of the lawn so we can still mow around it. Any suggestions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Our experts here, Daria?
There's a lot of options. It kind of depends on the lighting conditions and your soil, so it's a little hard for me to give specifics, but I think you're going to have a lot of options, like perennials. There's plenty that have a lot of color. You could do small shrubs. And if you want to, I would recommend our Plant Finder database. If you go to gardeninghelp.org for the Missouri Botanical Garden, you can put in the parameters of what your landscape is, and it'll provide you a list of plants, cultivars, and natives that might fit your landscape. So that's where I would start.
Mm-hmm. Rachel? I'm sorry. That was Eliza.
Yeah. You could also add some spring ephemerals, some early flowering bulbs to that area, because they are something that if you end up, they won't crowd any of your grass out. And if you need to mow over them to get rid of them, you can easily do that as well.
That's a good idea.
You can be like Rachel and not only be thinking about planting, but give us a call. What is on your mind about gardening this spring? Give us a phone call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. Something that has come up about soil. How do you enrich it? And what are some of the ways you can tell what is in your soil and what is missing, Eliza?
Yeah, so we talked about heavy metal soil testing earlier. At the University of Missouri Extension, we also do just general plant nutrient testing of the soil. So we'll test for nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, pH, and then a lot of micronutrients as well. So the main way to know what's in your soil is to get a soil test done, but you only need to do that every 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll usually give you recommendations on if you need to add any specific fertilizers. Usually people have a lot of nitrogen, so it's like maybe you need just potassium or just calcium or something.
Now, the last time you two were here was to talk about fall gardening, mm-hmm. and at that time we had discussed leaves. And Kate asks, I left my leaves for the bugs, mm-hmm. which Eliza, you had recommended. When should I pick them up and what should I do with them?
Yeah. In terms of when to pick them up, you could probably leave them year-round, but if you are interested in planting something else where they are, like if you have leaves on a vegetable garden bed, you can just make a hole in that leaf mulch. Make sure there's a space so that it's not touching any vegetable you plant in there, and then plant into it. Mm-hmm. The thing I will say not to do, and I think we said this in the fall too, is just don't shred those leaves because there are probably insects still living in there.
Mm-hmm. And pollinators, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier. What are the best pollinator-friendly native plants that don't require a whole lot of watering?
That don't require a whole lot of watering. I don't know. Daria, you might be better on this one.
Let's see. The first one that comes, that's not pollinator, but grasses, of course, more for critters, but those don't need a whole lot of moisture. Usually going to be like more of your full sun, those that tend to like glade-like conditions, so maybe... that is a good question. Some of that tolerate the full sun, hotter conditions. I don't know if fall blooming asters are good. There are some shrubs like buttonbush, for example. It's one of my favorites, but it can tolerate slightly moderate to just a little dry, not too much.
I was just looking the other day at Grow Native's website. They have some really good lists of, so for instance, if you want to be planting native plants in containers, like on your balcony for pollinators, they have some really good lists for that. And just depending on your light conditions, what native plants you should be planting in your garden.
Is there a way to introduce helpful insects, you know, that will eat pests that eat at our gardens, like they're getting to it before we are? You know, people buy ladybugs, for example, Liza?
Yeah, so I will say the best way to actually introduce those beneficial predators is just to plant things that they will like to eat, which usually just means native flowers or anything that's flowering. Because a lot of those predators, like ladybugs, lacewings, parasitic wasps, they actually eat nectar and pollen at some point in their life cycle. So the having the pest present is great, but they need nectar and pollen. If you buy a bag of ladybugs, they'll stick around in your garden for a little bit, but they are eventually going to leave when there's no more aphids for them to eat. So it's not the most effective long-term solution.
How about worms? Is this something that people still do, to buy worms for their soil?
I haven't heard too much of it, but I would caution against like probably bringing in worms, because I mean, if you have good soil, they automatically will come to your soil. But if it's coming in from another source, there's another worm that's in the area, I think, or around our region called the jumping worm, that there's a concern because they are voracious feeders and actually break down organic matter a little too fast. So I would hesitate bringing in, you know, introducing new others. Worms from other areas, that kind of thing, in case that comes in.
Well, speaking of other areas and moves, Jamie is calling from Rolla. Jamie, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I love all the resources that you've shared so far, especially Seed St. Louis. I recently moved from West County, St. Louis, and was having flower and vegetable and herb gardens up there. But now I've moved southwest of Rolla, and my soil is a lot more rocky. And I'm just curious if you have any suggestions for the Ozarks, the rocky, more clay-like soil.
Yeah, well, like Eliza mentioned, if you're trying to grow vegetables, raised beds are the way to go, because you're building above that soil, and so you don't have to worry about the really rocky conditions. You can also do, like she said, containers as well. And then there are some like glade type species that, you know, native plants that you can find. I was thinking Manfreda, I can't think of the common name, but it's kind of like a small yucca plant, and they love glade or rocky soil. There's a sand phlox that's in bloom right now at the garden. There's an evening primrose, which is a beautiful yellow, big, huge yellow flower. Finding plants like those that like those rocky conditions, you know, there's a good swath of those.
Yeah, and I'll say if you have really clay soil down there, there are some things you can do to make that soil more workable. So adding organic matter is going to add more pore space that will increase the water infiltration of the soil. So that could be just basically adding compost to your soil and kind of mixing it in. It might take a while, but if you're doing that on a regular basis, maybe year to year, you should be able to work that soil a little bit more.
With the planting, then, we've talked about native plants. I mean, is that really the big tip? Is that the takeaway that people should be hearing?
Yes. Definitely.
Is that happening more? Are people more aware of this?
Yes, which is really good.
Yeah.
Because it starts, I think, from the perspective of the pollinators, like, you know, the pollinator decline and trying to build up those populations. So in order to do that, you've got to plant natives. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to rip out your entire yard. Like, you can have your peonies from your grandmother, please keep those. But if you can set aside a little space in your yard that you can provide some habitat, you might actually be contributing and helping pollinator populations or providing resources for some of our most vulnerable little critters.
Yeah, and I think what's really nice about that is you don't yourself need to have a large area of native plants in your yard. But if you look around your neighborhood, you talk with your neighbors, if you and all your neighbors are planting some native plants, then that really extends the reach of that habitat. And it makes kind of a nice refuge for pollinators where there's some habitat in some person's yard. It doesn't have to be just in your yard, but think like at the neighborhood scale, is there enough native habitat?
Neighbors live close to each other. Are there plant pairings or combinations that lead to better outcomes generally? Daria?
Off the top of my head, there's a lot of plants that you can pair, but I can't think of anything like right at the moment.
There are some things, yeah, for vegetable planting. You can plant like, I think it's like beets and radishes or carrots and radishes at the same time in the same row. And then because radishes, you know, it's like 30 days and they're ready to harvest, you end up harvesting those as your carrots or beets are filling in. So you actually get more production basically out of one row of planting.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that I think, you know, on social media and maybe like in old gardening books, companion plants that are talked about to deter pests. So like marigolds next to tomatoes and things like that. There's not a ton of research on that, mm-hmm. but anecdotally, that is something I do. And a lot of gardeners I talk to do say that planting marigolds helps keep pests away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Daria, you mentioned TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing on TikTok that people should not be applying to their spring gardening?
Well, kind of like the quick tips, like quick shortcuts to gardening. And there's really not a shortcut to gardening. It's a straightforward path. And so there, especially when it comes to it's more houseplant care, but just doing things that don't make sense. I saw one that instead of actually just going to the store and buying a simple organic fertilizer, they were saying to soak your matchsticks in water to release the phosphorus and then pour that water over your plants. Please don't do that. Please don't do that.
Gasps of horror.
But I was just like, are you serious? Like, there's not tricks or, you know.
There's no hack.
No.
Yeah.
It's just learning how to care for your plant. That is the hack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we need to make sure, like, definitely, I think some of the tips that are out there on social media, there is some like science to them. But if it's a new thing that someone just kind of like figured out in their kitchen and started doing and now they're telling everyone to do it, we don't know. Like, I'm not sure if there's any chemicals in those matches
right.
that might be. You need to make sure that it's safe for you to be using, especially on food or plants that you're going to be eating.
Yes,
yeah.
For sure.
So basically, reach out to experts like yourself.
Yes.
Eliza Pesero is Field Specialist in Horticulture at University of Missouri Extension St. Louis County Office, and Daria McKelvey is Supervisor of Home Gardening Information and Outreach at Missouri Botanical Garden. Daria and Eliza, thank you so much for offering us some help with home gardening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.